I'm going to hand over to Alessandro, whose talk is the Herodotus, pre-bank and search engine for my glasses for Greek word order study. Alessandro, welcome.
Okay. Thank you, Stuart. So today I'm presenting a small project which I started for my personal use. I started developing it as a research tool for my own doctoral thesis, and I'm not sure yet if it's worth expanding it or and publish it. So I'm really looking forward to your advice and suggestions. So HTDDEP is a tree bank, and it's based on the first book of Herodotus. Tree banks, as you know, are past corpora, in which the syntactic structure of all sentences is given. And this parsing can be performed automatically, semi-automatically, or manually, and mine was manual, unfortunately. It took me quite a few months. And the syntactic structure can be described using a specific theory of syntax or grammar. Normally, tree banks consist of XML files. So how can a tree bank be useful for a classicist? Well, first of all, a tree bank, being a database which contains all the descriptions of all syntactic structures, is useful to assess the frequency of linguistic structures in a corpus. And this, of course, is mostly useful for linguists or classicists that are interested in linguistic issues, so people who study syntax or people like myself who study psycholinguistics. And since they make it possible to detect and list easily the syntactic behaviors, all possible syntactic behaviors of a word, they're useful to those who are interested in lexicographic studies. And since they make it easy to search for linguistic structures, they allow spotting similarities in structures across texts, and therefore can be useful for people who are interested in textual criticism, find parallel passages or parallel constructions in different texts. And they can also be useful for teachers who need to, find examples of specific constructions. Well, they're useful to build repertoires of examples. So this slide shows how a standard tree bank XML file looks like. So there are sentence nodes and word nodes, which of course are subnodes of sentence nodes. And each word node contains several attributes which contain the information that the users will eventually search for. So in most tree banks, use dependency syntax to describe the syntactic structure of the sentences. Dependency syntax rests on the assumption that each word in a sentence must be connected to at least another, so no word is left out of the syntactic structure. And a word W1 is said to depend on the word W2 if its syntactic balance is determined by the word W2, which means that the word W1 can only fit in the sentence through W2 because of W2. As it were, metaphorically speaking, W2 works as a sort of adapter between the word W1 and the rest of the sentence. And dependencies are always asymmetric, meaning that if W1 depends on W2, then W2 cannot depend on W1. And each word can depend on one and only one governor, and each sentence admits only one and only one independent word, which will be called the top node or the head of the sentence. So if we consider a Greek syntax like this, for instance, we can say, well, since this is a prepositional clause and it's likely to be the argument or the adjunct of a verb, you can say that the preposition is the element that provides the contact between the entire phrase and the rest of the sentence. So this should be the head of the syntagm. Well, of course, the noun would be the element that depends directly on the preposition and is required for the for all the other words to be constructed, and so on. This graph does not preserve the linear order of the elements in the sentence. Another type of graphic representation, namely the dependency R graph, does. As you see, the arrows connect the words in exactly the same way, but here it's possible to just read the sentence and without losing the linear order of the words. So this type of syntactic description through dependency syntax is quite powerful because it's quite easy to derive other types of representations from this. For instance, if you have if you're a linguist that has a phrase structure grammar approach or a functional approach, you will still find dependency syntax. A useful way of representing the syntax. Well, both of these representations can be derived from the dependency one. So I chose to use dependency syntax because of its flexibility. It can describe the structures in a way that might be used by people with all sorts of other theoretical approaches. So some other projects of tree banking for classical Greek already exist, and they're quite bigger than mine. So the first one is the Ancient Greek and Latin Dependency Tree Banks, which is part of the Perseus project, and obviously also includes Latin materials. And the other one is a Norwegian project, Proyel, which also includes Latin, Ultra-Slavonic, Armenian, and Gothic texts. So the Perseus tree banks are quite extensive, as you see, but they only include poetry. They use XML files, and they apply dependency syntax. And they all provide fine-grained morphological information for each word. And they also give the type of syntactic relation between words, meaning that they don't just say which word depends on which, but also how. For example, they don't just say that a noun is a subject, is governed by a verb, but they also specify if it's the subject, if it's the direct object or indirect object, and so on. They also provide the lexical entries corresponding to each word in the sentence. So they say from which word every word in the corpus comes from if one wishes to perform a lemmatized search. And as for the annotation methods, they use both the so-called standard and so-called scholarly methods. Well, the standard method means that individual contributors annotate some amount of text and the project supervisor checks it and then licenses it for publication, whereas they concede the scholarly method as well, which is a similar concept to that of critical editions. In a way, each passing is signed by the annotator. So every scholar that passes some text takes the full responsibility for it. And of course, it is not understood that passings provided by different scholars coincide. So, as it were, every scholar provides his or her own version or his or her own interpretation. So the Perseus tree banks are downloadable. But they don't provide any search engine on the website. They just provide the XML files, but they're compatible with some third-party applications, which aren't normally so easy to use. I think that the general classicists with little IT training would find them quite difficult and quite discouraging to use. So the Proil project, instead, well, as for the Greek part, only encodes the Greek New Testament, which is not complete yet, and Herodotus, and this is even farther from completion. And the other problem with the Greek material is that, apart from being incomplete, it's also annotated in bits and pieces. So, sentences from like different chapters. You have extensive parts of continuous text available yet. So they use XML files again. They use dependency syntax. They provide the same type of fine-grained morphological information and lexical entries. They only use a standard method, so single annotators can annotate bits of text, but the project supervisor has to approve them before publishing them. And free registration is required, but the tree banks are downloadable. They don't provide a search engine either, but their corpuses can be browsed online, sentence by sentence. So the structure of each sentence can be displayed, and they also provide four types of graphic representation of the dependency structures. So why did I decide to prepare my own corpus? Well, for my own research, I need to study natural language. And normally, Greek linguists assume that Herodotus is the closest representative we can get of natural classical Greek, in that, of course, it is literary Greek, but it's not metrical, of course, and it's not yet too much affected by rhetorical theory. So it should be a little less artificial than Attic prose. I decided to apply dependency syntax, as I explained, and use XML as a format. For my own research, for a start, I only needed some sort of coarse-grained grammatical information. So I started providing the wide grammatical categories and subcategories. Well, namely, at first, I only encoded categories such as nouns or verbs or adjectives without specifying the case or number or gender or whatever else. But then I decided I would include that, but it's under completion. And the same thing applies to lexical tagging with the lexical entries, and both procedures are semi-automatic, so it shouldn't take too much time. Hopefully, so of course my annotation method is a scholarly one, in that I provide my own interpretation, and especially because this has been a sort of individual and private project so far. And I decided to skip providing information about the syntactic relations, at least for the time being. First of all, because I didn't need them for my immediate purposes. Then also because it's quite hard to find a classification that could be universally accepted. Well, of course, both Proil and Perseus use one, and they follow the Prague dependency tree bank model. And I might decide to implement it in the future. So the strong point of my project, I think, is that I provide a search engine online, which is programmable through a graphic interface, which should be a little bit easier to use for the general classicists or linguists that are not particularly into computers. And I also wrote a dependency graph generator, so there's also graphic representations. And of course, well, the corpuses can be browsed just like the Proyl tree banks can. So this is the structure of the website. So the graphic interface builds the query for the search engine, which is written in VBScript and uses, well, the standard XML query languages. And the search result page is connected to the graph generator, and so is the sentence browser. And all pages, all result pages, are linked to the corresponding Perseus in the corresponding chapter in the Perseus website, where the whole text is accessible with the translation. And so this is the structure of the of my XML file. Well, I use the text published by Perseus. Of course, I had to correct a few typos and misspellings, and I also had to make some orthographical changes. Namely, because my XML file uses the U2F8 encoding, and since I also provide a string search, as you know, diacritics in polytonic Greek in the Unicode encoding, letters with diacritics are assigned different glyphs. And of course, I might write a sort of translator that overrides the diacritics one is searching for. But for instance, if I search for a string where a letter with a rough breathing or with an accent is present, the text search will only search for words with those specific diacritics in those positions and those letters. So those words would not be returned as a search result if the simple glyph with no other diacritic is searched for. And this would be a problem, for instance, if one searches for a word form with an acute, and it occurs with a graph in the corpus. So that's why I normalized all orthographies. I turned all graph accents into acutes, and I restored all elided forms, and I've resolved the crasis forms into separate uncontracted word forms. So the text itself is structured into chapter nodes, each one with its own ID, sentence nodes, and the IDs of the sentences doesn't start from one every new chapter. The sentences are all numbered sequentially from the first to from the start to the beginning of the corpus. And of course, word nodes. And for each word, an ID is given. Of course, the grammatical category is given, and the an attribute where the dependency is as encoded, and this is encoded by using the ID of the sorry, this arrow is wrong. So the ID of the word that governs the current one. And then there's an attribute where the morphological information is given, and one with the lexical entries, which are given in the LSJ attic form. Okay, so just a few things about sentence nodes. Of course, the most straightforward way to single out the sentences is using punctuation as a criterion. Full stops and middle dots would do the job. So whenever there is one, I started a new sentence node. There are some theoretical problems with coordination, though, because according to some syntacticians, coordination is a type of dependency. The meaning of weni widi wiki is not the same as wiki weni widi and all other possible permutations. and other projects, well, Project for instance, and they consider coordination as a type of dependency and asyndotic coordination as well. So they make word forms depend on punctuation items. For instance, they would encode something like this with every verb depending on the preceding comma. But this was quite problematic for my own interests. Because, for instance, if we have a look at a syntagm like this, if we consider coordination as a form of dependency, then we will have that psychru depends on te, which is the conjunction that introduces it, and hygru depends on kai, the first coordinating conjunction which introduces the first element, the psychru, would depend directly on the preposition on hypo. Well, this would be a problem for me, since if one were to make a search, to search for instances of words depending directly on hypo, neither psychru nor hygru would be returned as search results, because they would be encoded as depending on te and kai respectively. Of course, if we consider instead the coordinating conjunctions as coordinating particles, as, well, many clusters do, starting from Denniston on, this, well, we would just solve this problem, because in this case, we could just encode all the adjectives as dependent on hypo directly, and the coordinating conjunctions as particle depending on them. And as a consequence, well, if this exception to orthodox dependency theory is applied to all coordinating conjunctions, and so if all coordinating conjunctions are to be considered as particles, well, also polysyndetic coordination between clauses would be considered as it will follow that coordinated clauses would be considered as independent sentences, and as a consequence, also asyndetic coordinate clauses would be considered as independent sentences. So, compared to other tree banks, in mine, all sentences containing coordinated clauses are split into many sentences. So this diagram shows the broad grammatical categories that I used in my corpus. And, of course, coordinated conjunctions will fall in the intersection between conjunctions and particles. So the macrocategory verb is divided into four subcategories, but they all take the tag ver plus the other subcategory labels. And so the subcategories are finite verbs, infinitives, participles, and verbal adjectives, which, of course, would take both the ver and the edge labels. Nouns are also divided in, well, common nouns and proper names, and the label noun can be attached to any other part of speech that can be substantivized. So here are the other grammatical subcategories that are used across macro categories. For instance, well, the anaphoric label can be applied to pronouns or adjectives, or relative one can be applied to pronouns, adjectives, and adverbs, and so on. And so it was also necessary to introduce some special categories, namely those of parentheticals or endotactic clauses and of vocatives. So parentheses, of course, are clauses that are embedded into a matrix clause, but are completely independent from the matrix clause from a syntactic point of view. So I have extracted them from the matrix clause and turned it into dependent sentences, appended them to the database right after the matrix clause. And in the matrix clause, I've added as a signpost a dummy element in which the ID of the endotactic clause is contained, and which I have assigned the category, fake category, endo. And as far as dependencies are concerned, I can just consider them as related to the element in the matrix clause to which they are more or less semantically related, which in most cases would be the main verb or just the word that sort of triggers the digression contained in the parentheses. Vocatives are also quite problematic in that they are functionally sentence level adjuncts. They don't really depend from a syntactic point of view to any of the elements in the sentence, but they depend on the sentence as a whole. Of course, they might refer to elements in the second person, but that's just a matter of coreferentiality, which has nothing to do with syntactic dependency. So, I just annotated those dependencies as a dependency on the head of the sentence, as it were a representative of the whole sentence. And in order to distinguish nouns that depend on the whole sentence, so at the sentence level, from nouns that are actual adjuncts or arguments of the verb, I introduce this label voc just to distinguish them. And, well, this, the same reasoning applies to interjections. When they are alone, they are sentence or clause level. The function is at sentence or clause level. And when they accompany vocatives, they normally provide the vocatives some connotation, so I consider them dependent on the vocatives. So if we have a look at the website, so this is the search page where the queries can be built. So the elements that one wants to search for can be added by clicking on the Add New Element button, and the JavaScript function manipulates the HTML form and builds the form dynamically. And the elements will be searched in the exact order in which they are input. So, of course, every click of the button adds a table row in which the features of the element to be searched can be defined. So in the first, the second column, the category which the element must belong can be chosen. And the default category is anything, and it's a sort of wildcard, which of course can be used when the category itself is not relevant, or, for instance, when some context is needed and some context is to be taken into account. For instance, if we want a word to be, well, not to be the first or not to be the last in the sentence, we can just add an anything element before or after it. So there are also some other pseudo-categories in this menu. One is input word, which a word or just a string can be input, and lexical entry, in which a lexeme can be input. And I will talk about this later. So in the dependency field, one can type the ID that is associated with the element that the current one should depend on. So the 3 here means that the first element might in the search should depend on the third element in the search. This field also accepts some special operators, namely 0, if the element must be the head of the sentence, or not, followed by a figure, if the element is the element that the current one must not depend on, obviously. So in the contiguous field, one can specify if it matters at all if the element must or must not immediately follow the preceding one in the search. And this feature is particularly relevant for those who study discontinuity in language. And the morph button instead opens a sort of pop-up window in which one can specify the categories that the morphological categories that the element must have. So this, the categories that one can choose from these checkboxes are connected, as it were, by an AND Boolean operator. For instance, if one ticks both the genitive and the accusative boxes, the search engine will search for elements that are in the genitive and the accusative at the same time, and it will return no results, of course. So if one chooses input word from the menu, So the users will be prompted to input a string in Unicode format. A special operator is hash if one wants to specify a word limit. So if one wants to search for an entire word, it must put a hash at the beginning and one at the end of the word. Or if one just wants to look for a word ending, he or she must type a hash at the end of the string, and vice versa if one is looking at the beginning of the word. Lemmatized search instead loads a list of all the lexical entries in the corpus, and this of course is just the list for the first chapter, which is the demo version I uploaded on the website. So these are the lexemes that are encoded in the lex attributes and only apply to nouns, verbs, and adjectives. I didn't think it was that relevant to add the lexeme for pronouns, for instance, because if one just searches for demonstratives, well, I thought that must be, well, enough specific. So this list is called by an AJAX function. As I said, the entries are given in their attic form as they appear in Liddell and Scott. And the numbers in brackets provide the count of the occurrences of each lexeme in the corpus. So once the query is built and submitted, it's processed by the search engine. And just to show you very briefly how it works. So each sentence is processed one at a time. And as a first step, the engine builds a list of nodes that correspond to the grammatical, lexical, and morphological features of the elements in the query. Then those lists are combined into candidates as search results, and then all those candidate combinations are checked as for the contiguity and dependency requirements. And if the combinations are valid, they are displayed as results, and the occurrence count increases. And, of course, the total of the occurrences is displayed in the result page, which looks like this. This is a query I performed on the whole corpus. So this is just the bottom of that page. So the bits that are displayed as results start from the first element that is included in the query. And and the results are displayed in the order in which they occur in the corpus, so starting from chapter 1 to chapter 216. And the elements that are included in the query are displayed in bold, and a label specifying their grammatical category is also provided, and that's an option in the search, actually. And the all intervening elements are displayed in just in a normal typeface. So the link to the chapter loads the corresponding page on the Perseus website, whereas clicking on the ID of the sentence where the result is from loads the entire sentence in a three-row table, and the second row on the table of course gives the grammatical category of the word, and on the third row the elements that each word depends on are displayed, so the governors of each word are displayed. And if one clicks on view, then the dependency arc graph for the sentence will be displayed. So the graphs are generated with a quite complex algorithm, and they are SVG graphs. So unfortunately, they will not be displayed by Internet Explorer. And I wish I knew how to convert them into a bitmap image in order to overcome this. So dependency graphs are quite complex to generate because they have specific requirements. Because the arrows must start from the governors and must end on the dependent elements. And the arcs must not overlap, and they should not cross each other unless that it's strictly unavoidable. Dependencies that cross each other are called non-projective, whereas those that don't are called projective. And psycholinguistic research has shown that projectivity is a property that affects language production, because when we speak, we tend to build projective structures. And non-projective structures are also frequent, but only in limited number of contexts. When they occur elsewhere, they are difficult to understand. So what is shown in the graph actually corresponds to a linguistic property. So it is important to minimize the number of crossings, because if one is looking at the specific property which is actually revealed by those graphs, well, one might be misled. And of course, one can always double check, but that would waste the researcher's time quite significantly. So first of all, this is the algorithm. First of all, the generator loads the sentence and calculates the absolute position of each word. Each character is turned into a fixed width object, which is equivalent to using a monospace font. And there are some Greek monospace fonts, but they must be installed on clients to be used, as far as I know. So this way, the exact length of each word in pixels is computable. Then the length of all dependencies is calculated, which means the distance between each element and its governor. And the longer the dependency, the higher the vertical position of the horizontal part of the arc will be. And if two arcs have the same height and overlap to some extent, they will be dislocated by a few pixels, just to avoid this. And then the census of the arrows is calculated so that the arrowheads can be added at the correct end of the arc. And if two or more arcs start or end on the same word, the start or end points must be distributed evenly on the word. So the shortest dependency arcs will start or end at the outermost positions on the appropriate side of the word. And longer dependency arcs will occupy more central positions. So after the start and end points and the height of the arcs are calculated, of course they're ready to be drawn. At this stage, I just introduce a distinction in colors between dependencies between elements in the sentence and sentence and clause-level dependencies, such as those involving particles or vocatives or parentheses, as I said before. Because, since they depend on the sentence as a whole, well, the crossings that they might generate have not the same, effect on productivity as actual dependencies between elements in the clause would have. So just use different colors for those. And crossings are also highlighted, so the non-projective dependencies are also highlighted with some small red X's. And the file is ready to be displayed. So another way to browse the corpus is to the sentence browser. And so in the browser, one can input the ID of the desired sentence, or can just skip to a chapter. The words are displayed in a table. And so in this column, of course, the grammatical categories are listed. And in the following one, the governors are listed. And the position of the governor in the sentence is also given in brackets. If the user moves the mouse over the table row, the text in that row will be highlighted in red, and the row containing the governor will be highlighted in with a green background, so that it's an immediate thing to spot the dependency. So the other columns just display the lexeme and the morphological information, and in all browsers but Internet Explorer, the dependency graph will be displayed above the table. So, as I said, sentence-level dependencies are displayed in a lighter color, and all the crossings are highlighted with some small axis on the crossing itself. And this browser is all the interface is fully written in JavaScript and Ajax. So there are some problematic structures. So the problems in annotating this type of dependencies are both due to some deficiencies in the theory, and in a way also in the way I've chosen to structure the database. So there are some structures that could be better described if grouping were possible. So in the first sentence, for instance, the prepositional phrase that is introduced by Huppert expresses the agent of both the both participles, and theoretically it should be governed by both. And this, of course, contradicts one of the principles of dependency syntax, according to which each word admits one and only one governor. So it would be the structure would be better described if it were possible to group the participles together and consider the entire group as the governor of the prepositional phrase. So a slightly different problem that still requires grouping is that presented in the next example. Here, for instance, we have some coordinated adjectives, and pistotazon is introduced by te, and epitropon by kai, but there is this additional kai that coordinates the whole of pistotaton te kai epitropon to oikeion. So, of course, both pistotaton and epitropon, well, just as oikeion should depend on the noun they modify. So what do we do with this kai? Again, it introduces the whole group, so it would be better to encode it to group the adjectives and encode the dependency like this. So another type of problematic structures is elliptical structures. So in the first sentence, for instance, we have this tuto, which is the object of both peristellontas and epimelestai. And neither of, well, both verbs are transitive and they normally require an object. And we could say that the object of epimelestai is a zero form of an anaphoric pronoun referring back to tuto. And another case which is more complicated is that of the relative clause in the next example. And according to dependency theory, the head of a relative clause is always the verb, and the relative element is an argument or an adjunct of the verb. And verbs in relative clauses so are considered to be dependent on the antecedent of the relative element. So in this example, it might seem that doisi, so the relative pronoun, depends on the preposition and has no antecedent. It must just imply that the antecedent is implied. But if we have a closer look at it, things are not that easy. Semantically, sin toisi means with those during which. So actually, toisi stands for autoisi ha, with an accusative of duration. What happened here is that the relative pronoun was attracted into the case of the antecedent, and then the antecedent was omitted. So, if the result form was there, we would have that erksan, being the verb of the relative clause, depends on ha. That ha depends on erksan, and erksan depends on autoisi, which would be the antecedent. So how are we to consider this, to codify this, if we're not going to modify the text? We must say that toisi, is the relative pronoun, so it stands for ha, depends on erksan, and erksan depends on a zero anaphoric pronoun, which in turn should be governed by the preposition. So, of course, the other tree banking projects have faced the same problems. And so let's have a look at how they dealt with them, starting from ellipsis, which probably is a little bit more simple. So in the Perseus tree banks, the dependency properties of an omitted element are transferred to its governor. That is, an element that depends on an omitted one is encoded as dependent on the omitted element's governor. In the Proyl tree banks, instead, the zero elements are added to the text. And this solution, of course, would alter the linear order of the elements, and contiguous elements would become non-contiguous. And, of course, this would be a problem if contiguity is a requirement in searches, but this could be overcome with a slight modification to the search engine. On the other hand, if the implied element is not governing any other element, just like the tutto in the example in the previous slide, well, the only reason why one would like it to be there in the corpus is if one is studying the lexicographic properties of a given word. For instance, if one is studying the properties of epimelestai and wants to assess how often or it takes an object. If the object isn't there, and it would be relevant, if it would make a difference if we supplied it or not. But this, of course, is quite circular because, as I said before, the only reason why one would supply tutto in that sentence is because of the lexicographic properties of the verb. So it makes no sense to justify this modification on these grounds. So in general, of course, while adding this empty with zero form words would probably result in a slightly more accurate representation. For instance, in a sentence like the one containing the relative clause I talked about before. But it's not strictly necessary if one applies what they've done with Percy's tree banks. And, of course, it would imply some, modification to the search engine. So before I just follow the what Perseus have done. So moving on to grouping, the Proyl project solved the problem by adding some secondary dependency information, which they call slashes, and they display as dashed arrows in their graphs. So every element in the group is encoded as governing the element that is governed by the group as a whole. And they also use the slashes to encode some other types of semantic dependencies, such as those between a direct object and the predicate and complement, sorry. But these relations are just semantic and are not syntactic, so I disagree with that. So if slashes are used, the first example of a sentence for grouping would be necessary would be represented like this. So with actually both the participles governing the prepositional phrase. So, in the other example, both pistotaton and epitropon would take chi as a coordinating particle. And of course, if one chooses to consider coordination as a type of dependency, well, there would be no necessity to use slashes in a sentence like this, which instead could be represented simply like this, with chi introducing the first coordinating particle and te introducing chi. And but of course, this was not the case with my corpus. Okay, so for the time being, I haven't implemented slashes, even if I think it's a good idea. Of course, there were a few double dependencies in the corpus. For the time being, I just encoded the shortest or the semantically strongest dependency. So what will I do next? Well, of course, I will need to complete the annotation of lexical and morphological information, which, as I said, are semi-automatic tasks. And, of course, before publishing the corpus would need some revision and better testing, and I think that the best way to do that would be by using it for the research it was designed for. And, of course, slashes could be implemented. Once all this is done, I think the whole of the full corpus, which by Bernard only consists of the first chapter, book of Herodotus, will be ready to be released. And, well, in the future, I would really love to find a way to render SVG graphs in a portable bitmap format. And as long-term projects, it's worth it. it would be interesting to complete the histories and to start preparing a Latin corpus. So this is all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Huge amounts of material to get through there. Any questions? Yes, and then Tim.
Because of, it's all in XML and it's all about relationships, it seems like, and I've said this flippantly, it looks like a reasonably trivial thing to convert it to linked data.
Mm-hmm.
So have you thought about the, you know, the benefits of doing that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, actually, I don't know much about it. So I'm really keen on, well, learning more about things that I can do with this. Because yes, I mean, I'm just a classicist who can write some code. And that's one of the main reasons why I came here. Just so I don't know.
I was thinking about sort of making it, exposing it to people doing different types of analysis on it than perhaps you thought about. So.
Mm-hmm.
I was sorry, a couple with regard to your bitmap rendering. Uh-huh. Have you experimented with the Raphael JavaScript library?
No, I didn't know. But
I think it is a solution to your words. Because I worked on a similar kind of visualization,
right.
I think, where I had to draw a lot of lines and arrows on it.
Mm-hmm.
And IE was the problem. But there is a library called Raphael, spelled the English layer, PH. And that will automatically, if you use that, it will automatically take SVG instructions and map it onto whatever internal language IE uses for vector graphics. So that should solve it.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Because I was looking at some, the only thing I came across was this, I think it was an Apache library for, it was a server-side thing. A server-side thing. But yes, of course, I don't own the server, which is hosting my website. So, yeah, this is a... Next
yeah,
I suggestion.
Found it very, very easy to use.
Uh-huh.
So,
thank you very much.
Yeah, I had a question. I mean, about the kind of the your choice of text in a way. I mean, obviously it's a Herodotus tree bank, and you said near the beginning that Herodotus is nearest that we have to natural Greek, natural ancient Greek. Mm-hmm. I mean, have you come in sort of partly from your question about linked data? I mean, have you thought about how this might work with more structured texts, you know, where you have a more kind of subject, predicate, object relationship that might be more obviously expressive? Is that something you might be interested in looking at in the future?
Mm-hmm.
Like more structured kinds of...
Well, what do you mean? I mean, Herodotus is not, simple or...
No.
What do you mean? I'm sorry.
That's, I mean, maybe show my ignorance here, because this isn't my field at all, but it's just with this kind of approach to comparing kind of lexical structures work, would it be easily transferable to other media, other kinds of thing, other kinds of text?
Mm-hmm. Well, of course. That's how most of this corpora work. Well, they encoded any sort of text, and the other projects, well, Perseus in particular, they only worked on quite complex bits of Greek poetry.
Mm-hmm.
So they've done the whole of Homer and whole of Aeschylus. Yes, so yes, of course, and I mean the theoretical linguistic approach to those texts could be it can be applied to all sorts of texts. The reason, as I specified, the reason why I chose Herodotus is just because I'm interested in what the closest approximation to natural language is in particular. But this is just because of the theoretical framework of my thesis. But of course, one can study dependencies and how they work in any sort of text using a tool like this. And of course, as for the Latin project, I was discussing this with a colleague of mine, and the Latin equivalent might be the letters of Cicero, for instance. But there are corpuses, the ones I mentioned before, which all types of Latin are encoded.
This is a sort of an open question, but is there any way of speeding up the process of making these tree banks? Because I can't imagine how long it would take to encode all of Herodotus.
Yes. I can tell you. Well, encoding the first book, well, and I did it all on my own, of course. It took me 6 months, and I realized that one can't really work on that for, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 hours continuously without starting making mistakes. And I don't know. Well, I wish there was a way. I don't know if I can develop an algorithm to do that automatically. Well, I find it's quite hard to make decisions for oneself, especially when one finds that kind of elliptic structures where things are missing, or when one has to take into account semantics. The other point is that, of course, word order in Greek is quite free, and that's another problematic thing for writing an algorithm. I don't know. Yes, I assume that. Well, of course, if I had to complete Herodotus on my own at the same pace, it would be it would take 4 years or something like that. I don't know if it would be faster to develop an algorithm and then just double check and revise the whole thing and see if everything works all right, or to do it manually. I don't know.
Yes, I sort of imagine how you test the algorithm.
Yes.
How do you cope with things? I'm not a linguist by any stretch, but with things that are subjective, so things which fit into different categories, so something might be an adjective, or it might be a noun,
mm-hmm.
It might be both. Can you make it both? That sort of thing.
Well, of course. Adjectives then can be nouns, or substantivized adjectives. It's a good question.
Do you have to decide in that context what
yes.
it is and assume that that's...
Yes, exactly. And, the same work with some prepositions that can be adverbs or vice versa. It just depends on the context.
So, this is the second one directed towards you. With regard to linked data, do you know if Perseus has linked up any of this stuff?
This is the first time. Across this sort of project.
It'd
be very interesting if it was.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at the tree bank stuff for a long time. It was pretty inchoate when I looked at it. But, I don't think we have a URL for dependency or subject of sentence or that kind of concept. It would be interesting.
It looks like a structure enough that it would be easy to...
Yeah, it looks from a distance that it's easy, yeah.
I don't know if anyone was at the SOARS project. One very important question, red or white?
Well, I'll go for some red.
Okay. I don't know if I couldn't be at the SOARS presentation last week, but I was briefly involved with that project. And I know one problem they had was developing an ontology of predicates in a way to compare the Greek and Arabic traditions. So, I guess that's partly why I asked my question about would this work with much more structured kinds of tests, because that's, SOARS, as I understand it, is much more artificially structured, but in that kind of environment, it's much easier to create an ontology of predicates.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more complicated with something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I assume it would be almost impossible across languages, because you'd have to be doing some kind of Noam Chomsky deep grammar idea to create universal mapping.
That's why there was so much discussion of what we define as a unit of information. What are we actually going to give a URI to within a text? And at some point, you have to make arbitrary decisions, and you have to rule out things that another scholar would argue you have to include. But we can carry on questions, or we can switch the microphones off and just drink wine. I mean, there's far fewer of us than normal, but just the same amount of wine, which I suppose is the normal thing. I mean, I guess possibly One thing is, a lot of people who would have been very interested in this are at Digital Humanities in California at the moment. So I think we'll certainly make sure that the podcast is communicated on the various lists of things that those people read. So I'm sure they'll be able to catch up with this fascinating talk. Very best of luck with this project.
Thank you very much.